my mother throwing things at me, at my, you know, throwing ashtrays and coffee cups at my head and having to duck to make sure I wouldn't get hit. And she's like, that's not normal. I'm like, okay, all mothers don't do that. Hey, Warners, welcome to Women Your Mother Warned You About,
the podcast that makes everything sexy again. I'm Rachel Pitts, mommy, wifey, and realtor turned loan officer.
And I'm Gina Tremarco, jack of all trades, master of none. No.
Not true at all.
Owner of Carolina Improv Company and Pivot 10 Results. And I love helping businesses shift from people problems to performance results. Welcome to the show. It's a Saturday morning. We are having coffee while we record this. We are looking beautiful on Zoom.
Squinty-eyed.
Squinty-eyed. Oh, wait. Look how crazy my hair is.
Yeah, I hear ya.
This video portion of this will be deleted immediately.
Yes, please. You don't get to see us like this.
Although look at, you know, what do you think of my new color hair?
I think it's fantastic. I thought the photos were beautiful. Brittany Chagnon of Rock, Paper, Scissors is the hairstylist for Women Your Mother Warned You About. She's amazing. And you know what's so great about Brittany as well is I always have such a wonderful life experience going to see her to get my hair cut. She's a very, she's close to Jesus, and she's been through so much with her husband. He just finally got his, his approval for citizenship. And it's just the resilience of this woman is absolutely incredible. Like, I thought I was pretty resilient, but what they've been through is just incredible. And shout out to Brittany.
Yeah. Her story is amazing. Her husband is from Guatemala, and we won't go into all the details, but it was pretty scary. But she did the work. They spent so much money to do it. And there was a chance that he wasn't going to come back from Guatemala. And he's back because I saw her when I was getting my hair done. I'm like, so when's Miguel leaving? She's like, he's already back.
I said the same thing to her. And, you know, long story short, just to clarify for our listeners, he's from Guatemala, as Gina said, and it's a very, very difficult process to get your U.S. citizenship. And they did it the right way. Like, and they went through so much money and time and stress and frustration. Like, it's incredible. And he had a really good result. We should have her on and let her tell that story one day. You know, just to explain the process to people who might be, and also to help people understand, there's people out there like Miguel who are very hardworking and want to do it right. But good God almighty, it was like, I wanted to cry for her a lot of times, how many slam doors and roadblocks and pitfalls they ran into.
Well, even just the you know, they did everything possible to prepare because they had heard every horror story, and she literally equipped him like with a briefcase of every possible document. And and she's so funny the way she imitates him too, because she like repeats his stories, and she's like, he said, they didn't even ask for the papers you gave me. She does it much better. I mean, she does a great Miguel, but yeah, so that's pretty exciting that she's back, and it is a really good experience. Seeing her, because she is close to Jesus, and oftentimes I'm like, oh, I'm going to get a lecture about something. There's going to be a Bible verse about something, but it's cool because she's the one who introduced me to the church I go to. So,
yeah, awesome. She's a happening chick, but it's hard to get an appointment. So good luck out there, y'all. She's the best.
Well, you know, that reminds me, she used to be a coaching client of mine.
That's right.
So part of her success is my fault.
There you go. It's all connected.
Getting an appointment, not being able to get an appointment is
well,
all my
and
fault.
Here's an interesting thing that my husband and I have both been dealing with. And before bed the other night, I had to remind him to be grateful for how busy and blessed we are with work right now, work life, because there was a time And it, when I was your coaching client, Gina, there was a time when I wished my damn phone would ring more. And now I have so many people that need my assistance and guidance and services that, you know, I have to remind myself of that time when I was scrambling, scrounging, and now I'm blessed. So being busy is good when you ask for it.
And being grateful in the moment, because you never know when it's going to go away.
That's right.
So we started to talk about resiliency, which is a really good segue, because I have had resiliency on my mind lately, because I've had some, I have some stuff I'm going through, and I've always been that resilient. I can't remember the name of the person who sings this, but the song's Titanium. It's like my theme song. We'll have to play it sometime. Maybe Doug can play it. But it's being like so resilient, so tough, like titanium. And reflecting back on Brittany for a second, you know, everything she's gone through, she said, I know I have a greater purpose. And her greater purpose is she wants to spend time working on helping other families with these immigration issues, because she's become an expert at it. And when you look at the adversities that you go through, how can you find a true life purpose through adversity, through resilience? And the reason why this has been on my mind, I mentioned this to you a few times, is the newest book that I just read, which is Super Normal by Meg J. I've seen it with two different titles, and one of the titles like addresses childhood adversity, and that's really what it's about. It is a compilation of stories of children who have gone through adversity and how they were able to really kind of skyrocket and bring themselves to really high achievement because of the adversities. And you know, when we think about adversities, there's a variety of them. It could be divorce. You're the child of a divorce. And what was that like, being pulled back and forth between two parents? Of course, obviously, any kind of abuse is going to be an adversity. Having a parent or parents with substance abuse or alcohol problems, like I grew up with, having a mother who's an alcoholic. You know, you look at all of those things, and as children are so resilient, and they move right through it, and they don't think twice about it, but it shows up in adulthood in different ways.
I don't know if I would agree with the kids don't think twice about it. They just get used to it and figure out how to get through it.
I don't mean don't think twice about it. I don't think they process like we do as adults.
Well, I mean, they don't know any different. If you're a child in a situation that's from, you know, difficult to absolutely horrific, that's just the only reality that these kids know. They don't really know necessarily that there's better. Like David Goggins' book, Can't Hurt Me, like that whole beginning part of his childhood, it's insane. And I think, you know, to your point, and probably similar to what maybe is in this book that I'll definitely have to read or listen to. Like, it, the reason that he probably is such a high achiever is because he went through such hardships as a child that it was just the norm to suffer. You know, it's the norm to make it through. It's the norm to be like, this sucks, and how am I going to get through this? And it's not a great norm, but then there is positive result. Like, if somebody asks me what my greatest qualities are, I'll say, number one, I learned shit fast. And number two, resilience, because I've been through some things. And in my book that you can find on Amazon, The Gift of Wreckage, you know, I think, and I talk about it with people a lot, like, I'm not the super positive, high achieving person because I was necessarily born that way. It's because I went through some shit. Like, I wasn't this girl in 1994. I wasn't. I had to go through some shit and make it through some shit. And now when I use it to my advantage, I don't look back on my hardships. I use it to my advantage. Like, I just, like, I was at the gym the other day with my trainer, and I was just not feeling it. I was like, I didn't want to do it. And he was laughing at me because I would go, shut up, weak voice. Let's do this. Shut up, weak voice. He'd feel like, oh, whatever it takes, girl.
Well, that's, You know, I pulled up some stuff that I wanted to share. I mean, besides get everyone, you know, check out the book Supernormal. I highly recommend that. But I pulled up some stuff on how do we become more resilient. And somewhere I saw it, I can't find it now, about negative self-talk, right? That's exactly what you're talking about. We go to this negative place and you have to feel it when it comes up so that you can say, all right, this is a negative voice talking. This is the committee. This is the devil on my shoulder. Shut the fuck up.
Well, and it's not necessarily ever going to disappear. Like, I just had lunch with a fantastic, amazing realtor who, you know, she told me her story as well. Her name's Chris Koppel with BRG in Myrtle Beach. And she's been through it, man. She was like one of those on the verge of death in the hospital kind of stories, you know. Mm-hmm. And how those kind of things make you grateful. And we were talking about self-talk, and I mentioned to her going back through my journals from when I was a child. And I started journaling when I was about my daughter's age, about 12, 11 or 12. And I have these journals still. And I was looking for a song lyric or something that I wrote and looking through my journals recently and was going back to the beginning. And there was just so... this pages and pages and pages of, I'm so fat, I'm so ugly, I'm so stupid, I'm worthless, why do I suck so bad? Like pages.
Wow.
Pages. Now all of this, you know, if you read my book, I believe all of this negative self-talk and this feelings of worthlessness and negativity is what led me into being ensnared in a domestic abuse relationship and marriage, my first marriage. And I don't think that, I mean, I don't think he was a great guy, let's say, but I think I was vulnerable to it because I thought that, you know, this was the first guy that told me I was beautiful and I just let him lead. And I think when you're that vulnerable, that kind of predator comes along. Like you're primed and ready to be victimized, if you will. I don't really mm-hmm. like the word victimized, but
yeah.
That and eating disorders and ultimately trying to escape all that with substance abuse, like all of it's tied to that mean voice, that weak, mean voice. It all goes back to that because I was trying to get away from it for so long. So later, through a lot of therapy, through going through a lot of things, I basically started brainwashing myself with as much audio, as much written word, reading, journaling, all that stuff in therapy to reprogram my brain. Like, I'm not special. Anybody can do it. But I literally brainwashed myself for years, like 5 years at least, and continuing on till today.
Well, it's a mindset thing. And, you know, I'm always going to mention improv. When we teach improv and we teach the basics of yes and, there's a lot to be said about that because it's a constant reminder, even on stage, if you have an idea and you think it sucks and you have to keep saying to yourself, yes, and stay in that positive mindset, if this, then what, and not negate things. And that is a practice. That is truly a rewiring of the brain. And you can do it because if we can negative self-talk, we can certainly positive self-talk.
Yeah. And I think that a lot of that, it's learned behavior. I mean, if you go back to every baby that is born, kind of like now I have my puppy, you know, and I'm observing the puppy thing. Dogs are all, they're all born and they're all like happy, good, lucky puppy. And then they become mean dogs when they are not taken care of.
Taken
properly,
care of.
When they're not loved on, when they're not trained properly to know that this is bad, this is good. When, you know, same with kids. Like if they are taught negativity, taught that they're not good, if there's an abuse situation, all that stuff, I'm sure that she addresses in their book. Like
yep.
That's learned. You're not born with that. Everybody's born like, oh, ta-da. I mean, I don't know. That could be argued that some are bad seeds, but
well, you know, and my therapist, one of the first things she worked on with me, which was I had some resistance toward this, is self-worth, that we are born with self-worth and our self-worth is affected. We let external things affect self-worth, but the reality is we are all born with it. So in theory, what you're saying, I mean, I'm sure there are some devil seeds out there, but we're born for the most part good. Unless you have something really, really bad with you psychologically. I'm not a scientist or a psychiatrist, but I play one on stage, I like to say. It depends on your environment. It depends on how you're raised. To your point, like when you watch dogs and you see like dogs who've been abused and they have anxiety issues, right? It's the same thing with humans. And I can go into the whole attachment theory thing again, which I'm very keen on. Gosh, I wish I had time to go back for a master's in psychology. But anyway, I digress.
You have time if you want to.
It could happen.
You just have to get rid of some other stuff.
Yeah, I'm working on that.
No more playtime, just work.
Oh, man, I like to play. But yeah, all those different things affect you. And it doesn't have to just be your childhood, right? You can have different adversities in your adulthood that then shape you. But going back to this kid stuff, and I do want to talk a little bit about kid stuff in a little bit, because I've found a really interesting article for parents on how to help your children be more resilient, especially when it comes to bullying and things like that. When I look back in my childhood of like things that have affected me, and this has really come to fruition lately on just being aware of it. My mom was an alcoholic. She still may be, I don't know, we're not talking. But her behavior, this is kind of what I was trying to say earlier about kids, her behavior was the norm for me, right? That was my norm. And when I started talking about it in therapy, the therapist is like, you know, that's not normal, right? And I'm like, well, this is my normal. Like, my mother throwing things at me. At my, you know, throwing ashtrays and coffee cups at my head and having to duck to make sure I wouldn't get hit. And she's like, that's not normal. I'm like, okay, all mothers don't do that. You know, or the fact that when my brother and I would fight, she would send my brother outside to play. And then she would lock me, like physically lock me in my room, like took a key and locked the door so I couldn't get out. That was my normal. And it traumatized me because I still carry it with me, right? Like I still remember vividly that being locked in that room or being told I wasn't good enough or being criticized for wanting to go to college. And yet I spent so much time trying to please her, get her love, doing up until a year ago, I was still doing these things of trying to please her and win her love. And I finally had to like wake up and stop doing that. But through all of that, I was a constant. So the good news is I was a constant achiever. Constant. How can I win you over?
Whoa. It's definitely, well, and everybody has their reality of like thinking back to, was that normal? I don't know. What is normal? Because your normal is just until somebody tells you it's not normal. It just is. I definitely, as a parent, I can't imagine throwing an ashtray at my kid's head. That's for sure. And I'm the opposite because of all of my own feelings of lack of self-worth. I constantly do the opposite with my kid because I've heard her say, I'm just worthless. I'm just stupid. Like I've heard her say it out loud. So then I sit her down and we have a talk about this. Like you are worthy. You are worthwhile. Everything is good. Just because you make a mistake doesn't mean that you're bad. Like, and nobody did that for me. And then my parents are great people. It was just a different time. There were no ashtrays flying at my head that I recall, but I probably deserved it once or twice. But it was a different time. It was the go outside and play kind of thing. And,
yeah.
And there were a lot of things that I have already talked to my 11-year-old about that no one ever addressed with me because it just wasn't the time. You know, definitely the birds and bees thing and drugs and alcohol, like, we've sat there and talked about it and I've told her, you know, I will never get angry because I've been sober for so long and I've done it all. Like I've done just about it all. I'm like, never, ever will I get angry. I just want you to be safe. So no matter what's going on, just call me or your dad will come pick you up. It's cool. you won't get in trouble because that would be, you know, contradictory to what I have lived. And, but it just wasn't like that, you know, it was like you did something and you got in trouble, like, or whatever. And,
yeah,
the
I don't
discussion
think
the wasn't there back then.
That's what I was going to say. I don't think the conversations were there.
Exactly. Exactly. But it's amazing. It's really profound because I've never heard you say anything about the flying ashtrays and that stuff. It's amazing that you.
The look on your face was like, what?
Yeah, I just can't imagine, especially being a mom. I know there's a frustration that happens with puppies and with children where sometimes you're like, I've stood there and been like, yeah, I understand why people beat their kids. Mm-hmm. But I don't resort to that. So there's that fine line that some people cross, and definitely.
An alcoholic's going to cross that line.
They're going to cross the line because
they don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, they don't know. And so that's a, you know, it's a big deal, and that becomes their norm. And you know, where did she learn that? Did she learn that because that was her norm? Like, you can go back and back and back.
I mean, you can trace things, right? Like, and this is why I'm always huge on this childhood baggage stuff. I'm huge on it. I'm going to do something with it. I do have a bigger purpose plan I'm going to talk to you about. Not right now, but I have a big purpose thing that's probably going to come out. I'll start talking about it in 2020 probably. It's so funny. Jeffrey Gittimer kind of picked up on my bigger purpose. That's a whole nother story. I digress. Where was I? The norm.
The learned behavior, like where
the,
did your
Oh, yeah,
learn?
The learned behavior. So you look at my mom who had this alcoholism going on, which obviously is just the symptom of a bigger problem, right? She was soothing. She was soothing herself. She was self-medicating. And that came, you know, that was due to other things. And it was due to her childhood stuff. Now, she came from a super strict religious German family. Super strict. She came to this country as a 10-year-old in the 50s as a German post-World War II. She grew up like an only child because her siblings were so much older than her. She was like that oops baby. So she was raised as a only child in a very strict family in America as a German. I've heard stories that my grandfather was a bit abusive and, you know, beat the kids. I've heard stories how my mother was taken away and kind of like for a weekend and like toughen her up like one of those, you know, scared sober, you know what I'm talking about? Those programs where you take kids away and you're like, I'm going to show you rough time, or you put them in a prison. I forget what those are. Scared straight. I don't know. But their version of it in the 50s where she was taken away and somewhere in the country, and then she was locked in a closet in the dark for days.
What the ever loving fuck is that? What?
Yeah. Yeah. And this came up. While she was in the hospital a couple years ago when she was having her open heart surgery, and I was like living at the ICU, and every time they would slide her hospital door closed, she would viscerally, you could see her react. Her body would jump, her face would change. And of course, like none of the healthcare people even noticed it because their head's down and they don't pay attention. That's a whole nother tangent. And I said, what's wrong? She's like, I'm claustrophobic. Like, I didn't know this. It was the first time I was hearing it. And then she told me the story about being locked in a closet. So I think all that strictness that she had, and she always was fighting against it, and she was always running away from home, and she eventually ran away from home. At that point, they were in Michigan, and she ran to Chicago. That's how she met my dad. And then that brought its own set of issues with my dad's mob ties, or, you know, feds always coming over and raiding the house and things like that. So I, you know, you take the stress of all of that. And I think that's where her drinking started. Right. So the drinking was really more of a result of soothing other wounds. So it's not like she grew up around it.
Yeah. It can be argued. I mean, that's a whole nother tangent about alcoholism. It can be argued that it's, you know, genetic and inherited, what have you. But also, I mean, people find it. You know, I don't have a history of alcoholism in my family, but I sure found it and used it.
Because it's the coping mechanism you're using to get through the adversity.
Right. Whatever method of, I tried every method of escape, you know, to escape the feelings of lack of self-worth. And I think that when you dig down into people's addictions and all kinds of weird behaviors, it always comes down to their problems with their own self, because that's what any 12-step program is going to, like, turn the mirror on yourself. Look at what's going on. It's not always everybody around you and your circumstances, whether, you know, your hardships in life. It's always how you deal with it, because, you know, there's people out there with no eyes, no legs, no arms, you know, nothing, no opportunity, and they create opportunity in their world. So it's available.
Hey Warners, you have probably heard me talk on several occasions about how much I love wearing red lipstick. Lipstick is just one of those things that makes me feel good about how I look, and sometimes a little extra enhancement to my lips from Dermavogue doesn't hurt either. I've known Dr. Jim Turek of Dermavogue for years. He is not only my doctor who keeps my body healthy, he and his Dermavogue team keep my face looking healthy. And maybe a little younger, maybe. I mean, I love it when people say, something looks different about your face. But they can't really tell, because that's really what you want. You want to go to a place that makes your face look good and it makes people wonder what happened. So what's really cool about Dermavogue being our premier sponsor of this show is the fact that I'm a client, and I was a client before they became a partner of the show. So we're excited about that. Dermavogue has been offering the greater Myrtle Beach area the best in cosmetic and aesthetic dermatology since 2003. Opened by Dr. James Turek, Dermavogue combines expert medical knowledge with cutting-edge technology, bringing you the most effective, flawless solutions to any skincare or cosmetic need. Their patients enjoy only the absolute best in laser technology, including photodynamic laser therapy, hydrofacials, and V-beam laser treatments, as well as the latest fillers such as Botox, skin peels, facials, and more. At Dermavogue, they engage you in the process of total body health to ensure your satisfaction with their comprehensive selection of the most up-to-date, non-invasive cosmetic, dermatology, and spa treatments. It's human nature to want to look your best, right? Let Dermavogue help you get there. Schedule your consultation today by calling 843-357-2444 or visit dermavogue.com and tell them that the Women Your Mother Warned You About sent you. You can also find them on our website. Go check it out.
What do you think, what advice could we give to people who don't think they have resilience? Like, how can you build that?
Well, I think, you know, again, this is a practice and it's a mindset. And I've pulled up a couple, there's a lot of great articles out there. So here's a handful of strategies that I found. Avoid seeing crises as insurmountable problems. So think about when we get into those mindsets of like, oh my God, it's the worst thing ever. There's always going to be some solution. It might not be the perfect solution, but know that there's going to be some kind of solution that you're going to get through it. Accept that change is a part of living. I mean, people hate change. Without going into too many details, I have someone in my life who's like, this is who I am. I'm never changing. And I'm like, that's sad. And that's a throwback to the episode we did on fixed versus growth mindset, right? So if you're in that fixed mindset and you're like, these are always the cards I'm dealt, well, then you're always going to get those shitty cards, right? Move towards your goals. First, you need to have goals. Then actually work towards them. Take decisive actions. So many of us get stuck in... we become paralyzed in making a decision, which reminds me of another, we talk a lot about books. We should be getting a lot of money for book references, for book referrals. Game Changers, I think in that book he talks about decision making and the best times a day to make decisions, or, you know, even down to like, wear the same clothes every day so that you don't have to make a decision. Look for opportunities for self-discovery. God knows you and I do that a lot.
As much as possible.
You know, journaling. Taking some time for silence. Breathing into it, leaning into it. Therapy. Gotta love me some therapy. I've the best therapist I've ever had now in years. Excited. Nurture a positive view of yourself. That's a hard one.
Yeah. There's a lot of times with that mean voice that we have inside, like, you have to ask yourself, would you talk to anyone else that way? Some of the stuff that we say to ourselves, like, how would you feel about somebody if they were standing across from you and they said those things to you that you say to yourself sometimes?
Yeah. Yeah. This article says, in order to build emotional resilience, it simply requires being aware of ourselves and how we react in difficult situations.
Well, going to that very first one that you mentioned, like not looking at crises as insurmountable, I know there's plenty of warners out there who either experience it themselves or have someone in their life that's experiencing or experienced a major medical problem.
Oh, God.
And major medical stuff can scare the shit out of you, you know? And I've had mine. Yeah. When I first was diagnosed with Crohn's disease, the only thing that I could think of was I had dated a guy years and years and years ago who had a sister who had Crohn's, and she had the ostomy, so the bag that's on the outside of your body, mm-hmm. and all this. So all I could think of for a little while was, that's what's going to happen to me. And I was just, you know, but then something clicked and I just like went, okay, let's figure, this type of gal I am is like, let's figure out how to deal with this. And I had a conversation with a dear, dear friend of mine, and we actually have never had the same relationship since. She called me up and she was hysterical crying and so upset about how my life was ruined because of this diagnosis. And I had to halt her in her tracks and I was like, I'm not going to take that stand. Like, that's not how I feel about it. It just is. And I really don't appreciate you trying to make me see that my life is ruined because of a medical diagnosis. Like, I'm going to figure it out. Like, why are you crying? And I'm not in my body. Like, it was a very hard conversation. Like I said, she did not dig it at all. But
well, I mean, that comes down to empathy as well. And people can't have empathy if they don't understand 100% the situation. Now, there's some stuff I've been going through, and you and I had a little bit of a conversation over a Facebook Messenger, and I've had a couple people say, like, oh my God, this is going to be so hard, and this is so hard and so hard. And I'm like, enough. Enough telling me how fucking hard it's going to be. Because if you guys keep saying it, clearly it's going to be fucking hard. So enough. It's not going to be hard. I'm going to have moments, I'm sure. But if I go into it in a different mindset, as I've done most everything, so tap into those things that, think about any time you've had a hard time and how did you pull yourself through it? And tap back into that and find those. Like when I started my business, when I started Carolina Improv, if I would have listened to everybody, that company would have never started. Because it was like, and that'll never work. Not at the beach. Nobody will go see and show. Nobody will take classes. That'll never work here. That's all I heard. Rarely did I hear, what a great idea.
Well, because people do tend towards the negative for sure. And, you know, it's proven. You can look up medical proof on people, like let's use breast cancer, for example, of like women diagnosed with breast cancer or anyone diagnosed with the big C, where if you take the stance of like, oh my God, this is awful, you're a lot more likely to die as opposed to being like, all right, let's kick this thing's ass and not accepting, you know, the horrible diagnosis. Because there's been people told by doctors they would only live for a couple more months, and here they are a couple years later, they're like, fuck that guy, you know? It's just a matter of how you approach things, and exactly. It's your choice. It's totally your choice.
Exactly.
And not to say that it's not going to be, like you just said, there'll be moments, but you got to just like shake yourself off. Like the other day, here's a sales example. The other day I was, because I'm shifting from real estate sales into mortgage now. So I'm low man on the totem pole, right? And all I do is call people and try to, you know, let them know I'm making this shift and try to win their business. And I was like, the mean voice was coming in like, maybe you're just, this isn't a good idea. Maybe it's not going to work. No, 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 like that. And so I said, you know what? Uh-uh. Because my voice was like, just stop. You've done enough for today. And I said, no. And I sat down and it was like 4 or 5 and I made 20 more sales calls. Like I had to shake myself, but I made 20 more. And then I was sitting at my computer till 10 o'clock that night, following up, doing follow-up emails for all 40 calls. But like, I was like, not one more call or two, let's do 20 fucking more. And as a result, I had a kick-ass day yesterday. Some amazing shit happened. And it's just a result of like pushing through. And that's what can happen with resilience. Just push through it, push through the difficult, fight. It's okay to be uncomfortable, but that's part of resilience. Like you don't get resilience from like being in the rose garden. You get resilience from feeling the sting of the thorns.
Yeah. You get resilience from the hard work.
Yep. And the hard work involved in facing yourself and not blaming the, like just sticking with the business thing. It's not that there's not enough business in the world. It's that you are telling yourself that, because there is enough business in the world.
Yeah. And it's continuing to go back out there, right? Like it was, so talking about sales, because we do make sales sexy again. You can't just take one no and walk away. And I know Keith and I have had this conversation. It's like you want to push people to a no, so it's a no and it's not a maybe. But even a no might not be a no.
Well, and I'm running into this and I love it. In those 20 sales calls, one of the calls I got was with actually somebody that I'm pretty decent buddies. And he's like, you know, I'm going to shoot straight with you. And I said, I appreciate that. He said, I'm not going to send you business because I have really good relationships with the lenders that I use right now. And I'm not going to send you business. And I said, cool. I appreciate you letting me know that so that I don't harass you. And, you know, now and then I'm thinking, I'll call you next week. And it really is. I swear, for all the people out there that hate doing the sales call thing, I have been grinding it so hard that I've reach that place where I actually really enjoy it now. And if somebody tells me hell no, then I'm like, okay, awesome. And
it's just a challenge. Well, thank you for the challenge.
Yeah. And when you're sitting on the side of, you know, you're not making enough sales calls, because I've been there lately in the last couple months. I know that I'm not making enough sales calls and that's why my pipeline's not full. So you're like, yeah, fuck that go for no thing. I'm not, that sucks. But you got to push through to get to that point. Like we're talking, I've been tracking it on paper for the last, since I started with US Mortgage, every single person I call it, that I can fit on the page when I do a lot, but there's, you know, I've done a lot of calls, so now I'm getting good at it. It's just practice makes better.
Yeah. And you learn different things along the way of what you're good at, right? Like there are all these formulas out there and even as a sales trainer, like my focus is on building better relationships. Like that's my strategy. That's my style. That's what I'm going to teach people to do. Whatever works for you or makes you feel comfortable is what you have to do. Because if you don't do that, then you come off as not being real and authentic, right? And then there's like a misalignment. So you start to figure out what you're really good at that attracts people.
Right. And the thing about resilience, y'all, is remember that it's not going to happen like in one day. Like there's plenty of days in the past month or so where there was like, you get to the name on the list and you're like, I'm not calling them. I'm too scared. Like whatever reason, like she's not going to say yes. And so I didn't call that person. And now I'm like, this is totally crazy. Let's call them. I made some calls yesterday. I'm like, this is going to be terrible, but let's see what happens. What's the worst that can happen?
It's kind of like me incessantly sending emails to Jeb Blunt.
Hey, and it worked out, didn't it?
Every time, because I'm on his mail. Every time I get his email, I'm like, that back then, I was like, hey, want to be on the show?
Let me tell you something. Now they are, Jeb Blunt's people are pursuing me because I called them and they walk the walk, man. I called them to find out, you know, to try to get Jeb for, to speak for US Mortgage. And he's a pricey speaker because he's worth it. And his girl, man, she's been following up relentlessly to see like, when can we schedule him? And I'm like, he's out of our budget. She's killing it. And I love it, especially because he's, like I said, they're walking the walk. They're practicing.
Yeah.
With their
and,
peach.
And let's back up for a second. Her question, when can we schedule him? Right. That right there is a nice little sales nugget, right? It's that open question. Like I do that all the time with clients I'm pursuing. When can you and I get together? Not a, can we get together? Hey, I'm pursuing a lot of business in Charleston. I'm like, hey, I'm going to be in Charleston this week. Do you, which day is good for you while I'm here?
Mm-hmm. Because if you're not asking the direct question, then, you know, because she knows, she already knows my objection. My objection is he's too damn expensive and we don't have that in our budget at this time. And she's like, great. So when can we schedule him? Because we might be able to work something out. Like, since you guys, your headquarters is in Atlanta or the regional, you know, is in Atlanta. He lives in Atlanta. We could make it work when he's in town and work it out. Like, they're very good.
That's awesome. I can't wait for you guys to book them so I can come to it.
Right on.
I'm going to crash it. A couple other tips I want to hit on. Emphasize empathy. Empathy helps build our own self-worth. We practice seeing ourselves and everyone around us as having value, yet not promoting entitlement or enabling anyone. Being thankful and self-sufficient will free up energy to become empathetic. Sometimes empathy isn't learned well when things are too comfortable since it sends a false sense of security. Where does this article come from? I'll put the link in so that people can read this article. It is called 5 Steps to Help Build Emotional Resilience. Another point, practicing patience. This is about self-talk. Use your self-talk and be mindful when you're in a difficult situation. Notice what is happening while you have to wait for something rather than focusing on the losses. Remain in the stress. Choose mindfully to examine what you can learn from the situation instead of escaping. So that's what they're talking about. So you feel the stress, you don't have to run from it. You can, you know, I do this a lot in the emotional intelligence training work that I do, is helping people identify their internal triggers. You know, what is stressing them and why, right? Identify that. See yourself as courageous and brave instead of a victim of circumstance. Which I started, I wanted to mention this, you know, the difference between my mother and I. My mother comes from a place of the world's out to get her, right? I come from a place of the world has a lot to give me.
I feel that.
You know, so it comes back down to mindset. Next tip, creating capacity. Instead of finding something temporal to ease discomfort, we need to be asking ourselves what the root cause might be. Maybe it's an unresolved hurt or chronic condition. It may not have an immediate solution, but we can experience peace despite its pressure.
Well, let me tell you something about sobriety. So I've been sober for 7 years now, and there are definitely times when I want to have a drink to escape a stressful day, right? Because that's what a lot of people do. They're like, oh God, a stressful day. I'm going to go have a glass of wine. That's kind of like the go-to for a lot of people. And there's times when I'm so stressed, I want to escape so badly. And I feel a little bit like a dog in a corner, right? A dog in a pen or what have you, that I'm sort of running around trying to figure out how to escape. And then after a while, I figure out I cannot escape. Like I have to make the choice to sit in it and then try to figure out what is it that's triggering me? Most of the time it's selfishness that I'm not getting my own way. like in a business situation, if a deal's not going the way I want and something's going on, it's selfishness. I want the deal to close. I want to get paid. Like, it all comes down to that, you know, and
that's self-awareness right there.
But it's just imagine for a second, if that's how you escape, like having a glass of wine to get away from stress, like take that away from yourself for a minute. And it's okay. You can do it. You do have the strength. It's not fun and it's not comfortable at times. But when you get to that point, if you get to that point, then you can learn something and go, okay, you know what? In the big scheme of things, what I want is not really as important as my client being happy. And let me take myself out of it and stop being an asshole and figure out what solutions I can bring to the table. You know, I've done that more than once. I'm like, it's okay. It's not fun though. A lot of times there's a hot bath involved, but
well, I was going to say, you know, there are how do we break bad habits? And I forget what interview or book this came from, but replacing bad habits with good habits, right? When you talk about the, I am just as guilty of like, I'm going to go have a glass of wine from the stress, but I'm also really cognizant of it.
Right. Well, there's nothing wrong with it, you know, unless right. you're an addict like me. Like,
it's right. Just... But for me, you know, I'm cognizant of it because of the higher possibilities of me becoming an addict, right? And I do have an addictive personality.
Right.
So I pay attention to that. And there was one night where I was just, you know, I was ready to fall into a bottle. And I'm like, you know what? Go to the gym. And I went to the gym at like 8:30 at night. There were like three people there, but that's how I managed to like shift. I'm like, I'm going to go to the gym. I'm going to go work out and then I'm going to go home and go to bed. And that's exactly what I did.
It's a way better choice. And again, I'm not slamming anybody who drinks because that is, it's legit like a way to relax. I get it. But definitely if it's becomes a way to drown out dealing with something and coping, going to the gym is a whole lot better, like for sure. And,
it's just really what you're looking for. What you're really looking for is a distraction.
Right.
Right. And that's really what you need to find, something that's a distraction. And so we can use alcohol or drugs as a distraction, or we can use something else as a distraction.
Right. And it also to find a mindset shift, because usually, like they'll say, it's all going to look better in the morning. And a lot of times it does, because your mind has finished going, I can't believe this is it. I can't believe this is it. I can't believe this. You know, that has worn itself out.
What does your mind do?
I can't believe this is it. I can't believe this is it. That has like worn itself out and just, you know, it's done.
Well, you know what? The other thing you were talking about, and if Keith was on this, he would bring it up. We have fight or flight, right? We are either going to push against it and resist and fight, or we're going to flee from it. But the other one is freeze, right? Or you freeze and you do nothing. And you take cover. Hide behind a rock. Hide behind a rock from the dinosaur coming after you.
Yeah. You know, another tip for developing resilience is, think about someone that you know that's, you consider resilient and they've been through things, and, you know, ask yourself, do I want to have my story be someone that was weak and crumbled and hid? Or do I want my story to be, God, that woman went through a whole lot. Look at how strong she is. She's mm-hmm. so inspiring. Like, you get to choose to write that story for yourself each and every day.
Yep.
And even if you've been playing the victim up till this moment, you can change that right now, because then your story will be, God, we didn't think she was going to make it. And then she had this moment. I don't even know what happened. It turned around and she freaking crushed it. Like, you have that opportunity right now, starting at this moment and at any time. It's okay to falter and stumble, and you can get up and conquer.
And part of the falling down is, as you know, a lot of people watch you and I. They follow us quietly. They never ever say anything, but you know they're watching our every move. And then all of a sudden, someone will say something, or someone will step forward, and you don't realize they're watching you. I think sometimes we are role models for what to do, sometimes what not to do. But if you're practicing that resilience, I think there's also the, there are people who go, oh, she's going to bounce back because she always does. Now, right. There's good and bad to that. Like, I love that people say, oh, it's Gina. She bounces back every single time, which is true. But I'm going to tell everybody, sometimes I don't want to be looked at that way. And I want you to actually put your hand down to me because I'm on the ground and lift me up because I don't feel like bouncing back.
Yeah. Yep. Sometimes part of the bounce back is somebody helping you.
Yeah. So the other piece of that is like raise your hand and be like, yo, hey, yeah, I know you think I got this, but I don't. So help me. So that's a two-way street. I want to, before we wrap this up, I do want to kind of quickly tap into this for parents, for kids, because there are another article I found. And again, I'll post this or give it to Doug to post. Strategies to build resistance for kids. Parents can help kids build resilience. Parents can help kids build resilience and confront uncertainty by teaching them to solve problems independently. While the gut reaction of the parent might be to jump in and help so that the child avoids dealing with discomfort, this actually weakens resilience. Kids need to experience discomfort so that they can learn to work through it and develop their own problem-solving skills. Without this skill set in place, kids will experience anxiety and shut down in the face of adversity. And I think we see a lot of that today because there are so many helicopter parents, and now I've heard the phrase lawnmower parents, of not letting kids work through that. And I'm seeing it just with people in their 20s that I work with, that they don't have the skills. So a couple things, build a strong emotional connection, spend one-on-one time with your kids. Kids develop coping skills within the context of caring relationships. So it's important to spend one-on-one time with them. This means you need to put down the smartphone and focus on your child. And there's more to that. Promote healthy risk-taking. In a world where playgrounds are made safe with bouncy floor materials, which I do not have. Oh, and helicopter parenting. Oh, look at that. I didn't even know they put that in there. It's important to encourage kids to take healthy risks. What's a healthy risk? Something that pushes a child to go outside of their comfort zone but results in very little harm if they are unsuccessful. Examples include trying a new sport, participating in the school play, or striking up a conversation with a shy peer. When kids avoid risk, they internalize the message that they aren't strong enough to handle challenges. When kids embrace risks, they learn to push themselves.
As a parent, I can relate to that in a big, big way. And, you know, my daughter and I have had this situation come up a lot lately because her dad is one of those people that his mom and both his parents made sure that he never had to, you know, they did everything they possibly could for him. And, you know, he's a great person, not really wonderful person. And he pretty much is a grown adult and a lot of times doesn't know how to handle a lot of the stuff that comes his way because his parents still handle it for him. And so I struggle against that with my child because I don't want her to be that way. I mean, frankly, when she's 40 something, I don't want her fucking live with me. I want her out on her own, doing her own mm-hmm. thing. And yeah. That's the thing that happens with kids, like that parents want to solve everything. They want to fix everything. That, I mean, do you want your 40-year-old living with you? Because they will if you don't teach them to do shit, you know?
Well, I know some 30-year-olds out there still living with mom and dad.
Yeah. And not, I mean, some people do it for financial reasons. Fine. But are you doing it for financial reasons because you can't fucking pull it together? You know, is that what it is? And so I struggle with it with my kiddo because, and that's one reason I put her in Montessori when she was young, because the premise of Montessori teaching is if the child can do it themselves, let the child do it themselves. Because, you know, you want them to feel proud that they can do small and large tasks and achieve things so that they go on to believe they can do it and fix stuff and not have to get mommy to come in and fix it. It just is, it's so unattractive. And, but yet I understand the helicopter parents and the ones that have done it because it's really hard to watch your child be uncomfortable and upset. It's hard. I mean, back in the day when I was a kid, it was kind of like, go outside and play, you're fine.
Like, yeah, I was going to say, my parents thrived on it.
We didn't. Right. We're like, go deal with it. But in today's world, because I think it has a lot to do with, we don't send them outside and get away from us. We want to keep them close to us because we're worried about what might happen. And it is a real threat. So then in that vein, our kids are closer to us. We're watching them more closely. So we see a lot more. And it is so hard to watch my child struggle. And, you know, with her bullying situation she went through last year, I did everything I possibly could to give her tools in the tool chest until I realized it was like adults and stuff. So had to step in and make a shift for her. But prior to that, I would give her tools and be like, why don't you try talking to the girl? And why don't you try this and that, to try to let her solve it herself? And I'm not the best at it. You know, I'm not saying I'm perfect, because I still do shit for my kid that I know she probably should do for herself. But I have started having that conversation. I'll be like, you're 11. You don't need me to do that for you. You need to do it, because I want her to be independent as soon as possible. Like,
well, here are a few others. Resist the urge to fix it and ask questions instead. When kids come to parents to solve their problems, the natural response is to lecture or explain. A better strategy is to ask questions. By bouncing the problem back to the child with questions, the parent helps the child think through the issue and come up with solutions. And all these things I'm talking about for like how to help your kids, really, we can be using as adults these tips. Teach problem-solving skills. The goal is not to promote rugged self-reliance. We all need help sometimes, and it's important for kids to know they have help, kind of what I mentioned earlier. By brainstorming solutions with kids, parents engage in the process by solving problems and encourage kids to come up with a list of ideas and weigh the pros and cons of each one. Again, if you're an adult going through stuff like this, reach out to another adult that might be able to help you with that. Label emotions. When stress kicks in, emotions run hot. Teach your kids that all feelings are important and that labeling their feelings can help them make sense of what they're experiencing. Tell them it's okay to feel anxious, sad, jealous, etc., and reassure them that bad feelings usually pass. And this is something that we do in some of our training. We have the whole trigger exercise to identify and label not just the emotions, but the thoughts. So it's like, how am I feeling? What am I thinking? What do I need? Demonstrate coping skills. Deep breathing exercises help kids relax and calm themselves when they experience stress or frustration. This enables them to remain calm and process this situation clearly. This also helps adults.
I had to do it. I had to do that just the other day. Roxy was getting her vaccinations and she was freaking out. And I didn't really know how to help her except for assure her it would be okay. And then she was like, getting herself worked up, and all I knew to do was just to get her to breathe through your nose, slow it down. And because I wasn't going to be like I comforted her, but I'm like, it's going to be okay, so just
breathe in the oxygen. And then finally, embrace mistakes, theirs and yours. Failure avoiders lack resilience.
Ooh,
failure avoiders lack resilience. I love that. In fact, failure avoiders tend to be highly anxious kids. When parents focus on end results, kids get caught up in the pass-fail cycle. They either succeed or they don't. This causes risk avoidance. Embracing mistakes, your own included, helps promote a growth mindset. Yes. And gives kids the message that mistakes help them learn. It can be helpful to talk about a mistake you made and how you recovered from it. I'm all about the failure. I'm constantly failing and loving it. Was that the last one? I think that is, because I think it's time for us to actually wrap up the show. Oh, there was more. There was more, but you know, and I'll post the link to these articles, because I think these are really good articles for anybody who wants to work on their resilience or help their kids with resilience to, you know, be a higher achiever or get to the things that you want to get to. Being more resilient will be helpful. We know it. We walk the walk. So now we're talking the talk. It's time for us to go.
Time to move on.
Sad. I know this was like a deep, this was kind of a deep, more serious sounding, not as much laughter when we have Keith on board with us, but
it's because it's too early.
It's too early for us. We've both been running really super hard, and squeezing in recording time has been a little challenging. So we're like Saturday morning coffeeing it. And this was fresh on my mind. Again, the book Supernormal by Meg J. I'll post a link to that. I'll give some love to our amazing sponsor. This show is brought to you by Dermavogue. The people that also keep us looking sexy. I don't know if you've noticed. I've had some other, I don't know. We'll talk about it later, but they keep me. I don't know what's going on over there, but you're making some funny faces on video. But it's time for us to wrap up this show. Thank you so much to our Warners for listening today to Women Your Mother Warned You About. I'm Gina Tremarco. If you want to find out more about me and our companies, go to GinaTremarco.com. And for Rachel,
you can find me, Rachel Pitts, all over social media as Rachel on Real Estate, or you can visit RachelMTG.com. And to find out all about us, including Keith Walters and all of our social media links, you can easily find them on womenyourmotherwarnedyouabout.com.
Awesome. And if you get a chance, please give us a review and a rating, and we will read your review on a future show. As a matter of fact, I just realized we forgot to read some reviews. We've had some new reviews come in, but we'll read that on our next recording. So it is time for us to sign out this morning, today, whatever this is, whenever you're listening. I know I shouldn't be saying this morning. It just is this morning for us. And remember to, I don't even remember the tagline, keep it real, raw, relevant. And what else, Rach?
A little irreverence doesn't hurt either.
Bye, Warners.
Bye.
This really will get serious soon.
Yeah, it doesn't have to. I don't think anybody wants it to be
farted?
Serious.
This has been a presentation of the Sell or Die Network. For more podcasts that you can take out into the street and turn into money, visit SellorDieNetwork.com.